Welcome back, everybody, for another deep dive. This time, we're taking a look at a murder case out of Illinois that went all the way up to the state Supreme Court, People v. Evans, Jr.
Oh, this is a good one.
It really is. You know, sometimes it's not just about who did it. It's about what happens after the guilty verdict.
Yeah, the procedure, the appeals.
That's exactly it. So let's set the stage. It's 1999. Jerry Watson is found, stabbed to death. His car's been totally ransacked. Stereo equipment's gone.
Classic signs of a robbery gone wrong, right?
You would think so. Police quickly focus on Robert Lee Evans, Jr. Not only was he found with the stolen stuff.
Busted.
But get this. DNA testing links him straight to the scene.
Oh, wow. So we're not talking about just a little trace DNA here.
Not at all. Blood stains on the clothing Evans was wearing, they matched Watson's DNA.
Okay, so slam dunk case. Right. That's it. Game over.
You would think so.
Yeah.
But Evans, he changes his story. First, he denies everything. Then he says, no, 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 it was my brother. He's the real killer.
Oh, throwing his own brother under the bus.
Well, the jury didn't buy it. They found him guilty of first-degree murder, attempted rape, too, and he was sentenced to death.
Wow, death penalty. That's serious.
It is. But this is where things get really interesting for, you know, anyone who loves the law. Evans, he doesn't just accept this. He fights back, launches this whole series of appeals trying to get that conviction overturned.
So this case is a total roller coaster ride through the courts, huh? Trial court, appeals court, back and forth.
You got it. And each appeal raises some really tricky legal questions.
Okay, I'm hooked. Let's break it down. What was the first move?
First up, he tries to get the trial judge replaced. Judge Grenius claims there was bias.
Trying to get a different judge. That's a bold move. Did it work?
Well, here's where knowing your procedure is key. In Illinois, there's this super strict 10-day rule. If you want to challenge a judge, you got to do it within 10 days of, you know, reasonably knowing who that judge is.
10 days, that's a tight window. Did Evans have a good reason for missing it?
The court didn't think so. Evans had already been in front of Judge Grenius for, like, 12 pretrial hearings.
Oh, so they're saying, come on, you had your chance.
Exactly. You snooze, you lose, basically. Too late, request denied.
So, lesson one, don't mess with deadlines in the legal world. What was next on the agenda?
Right. All right, so next up, ineffective assistance of counsel.
The classic my lawyer was terrible argument. I always find these intriguing. Mm-hmm. What was Evan's claim?
Well, basically, yeah, he was saying his lawyer was incompetent. And to win with that argument, you got to pass something called the Strickland test. It's a two-parter, you know.
Okay, break it down for us. What's the Strickland test all about?
So first, you got to prove your lawyer screwed up so badly. It wasn't just a mistake. It was like below a reasonable standard, you know?
So not just any mistake will do. It had to be seriously bad lawyering.
Right. And then here's the tough part. You got to show that those mistakes actually affected the outcome of your trial. Like if the lawyer had been good, things would have gone differently.
So even if your lawyer was sleeping through trial, you got to prove it actually changed the result. Tough standard.
You got it. So even if we assume Evan's lawyer made a couple of errors, was it enough to overturn the whole conviction?
That's the question. And you got to remember, this case had a ton of evidence stacked against Evans. The DNA match, the stolen stuff, his constantly changing story.
Like trying to climb Mount Everest?
Yeah, it's really hard to show that any lawyer could have overcome all of that.
This is such a good illustration of the Strickland test in action, don't you think?
It really is. It's a point that any law student should really take to heart.
So that's two down. Substitution of judge denied, ineffective assistance of counsel claim, also a no-go. What's next?
Let's hear it. What other legal tricks did Evans have up his sleeve?
Well, the next one is all about jury selection. The Batson challenge.
Oh, the Batson challenge. Now that's a big one. Jury selection can make or break a case. Remind us, what's a Batson challenge all about again?
Right, right. So basically it comes from this landmark Supreme Court case that says you can't discriminate based on race when you're picking a jury.
That's huge. A cornerstone of a fair trial.
Totally. So in Evans' case, the prosecution, they had struck 5 black potential jurors.
5. That does raise some eyebrows.
Right. And Evans, he argued this was totally racially motivated.
Okay, I see where he's coming from. But just because there were 5 strikes, does that automatically mean it was discrimination?
No, it's not that simple. To win a Batson challenge, you need more than just a number. You got to show a pattern, a deliberate attempt to exclude a certain racial group.
So the court would be looking at the reason behind those strikes, not just the numbers themselves.
Exactly. And there were a few things that didn't help Evans's argument. First, Two black jurors actually did end up serving on the jury.
Okay, so it wasn't an all-white jury.
Right. And the prosecution, they gave reasons for those strikes that weren't about race. You know, things like past experiences of the jurors or views on the death penalty.
So they had valid legal justifications.
And the court found those reasons believable. And here's another thing. Appellate courts, they tend to give a lot of leeway to the trial judge on jury stuff.
Meaning they're not going to second guess the trial judge's decisions easily.
Right. They figure the trial judge was right there in the room, saw the whole thing.
Yeah, makes sense. So even if Evans's team had their doubts, it was a really tough argument to make on appeal.
It was. Okay, so we've covered substitution of the judge, the ineffective assistance of counsel, and now the Batson challenge.
Three down. What's the last legal hurdle Evans threw at the court? It feels like he's got a whole playbook of arguments here.
He does. Okay, the last one is prosecutorial misconduct, and it all went down during closing argument.
Ooh, closing arguments. That's where things can get really dramatic, right?
What happened? Spill the tea.
So the prosecutor, get this, they compare Evans' defense to the one used in the O.J. Simpson trial.
Whoa, hold on, seriously. Invoking O.J. Simpson? That seems like a risky move.
It definitely raised some eyebrows. Even the court later said it was ill-advised. Ill-advised, that's putting it mildly.
But context is key here. The prosecutor made those remarks in response to what the defense was saying. You know, it wasn't just a random attack.
Ah, so it was part of the legal back and forth.
Right. And this is important. The court pointed out that even with that, quote, ill-advised comment, the evidence against Evans was just overwhelming.
So they're saying one comment, even if it was iffy, doesn't derail the whole case.
Right. Prosecutors have some leeway during closing arguments, as long as they aren't, like, crossing ethical lines or breaking the law.
It's a fine line to walk.
So we've got these four major legal arguments that Evans used. What can we learn from all of this?
Well, the Evans case, it's like a masterclass in how the appeals process works and how important it is to understand how legal arguments play out alongside the actual evidence.
There's some big lessons here.
Yeah.
A couple of biggies come to mind. Like, first off, the Evans case, it really shows you how important procedure is in the legal system. Miss a deadline, even by like a day, and it can tank your whole case. Doesn't matter how good your argument is. It's kind of scary how much power those deadlines have, huh? Like that 10-day rule for challenging the judge, it was like unforgiving.
Oh, yeah. And that's not just an Illinois thing. You see strict procedural rules everywhere, and there's a reason for it, you know? Mm-hmm. It keeps things moving, prevents those crazy delays, and tries to be fair to both sides.
So even if a rule seems kind of harsh in a particular case, it's there for a reason. Makes you think.
Totally. It's a big picture thing. And law students, they got to get that. It's not about individual limbs. It's about a system.
Right. Okay, so that's procedure. What's another takeaway from all of Evans's appeals?
The second one that really sticks out is that Strickland test we talked about. It's the gold standard for proving ineffective assistance of counsel. And it's tough by design.
Yeah, it's not enough to just say, my lawyer messed up.
Nope. You got to prove those mistakes actually tip the scales, change the outcome.
Which is really hard when you've got so much evidence against you, like Evans did.
Oh, for sure. It's like, if the prosecution's got this ironclad case, it's super hard to say A&Y lawyer could have gotten you a different result, you know?
So the stronger the prosecution's case is, the harder it is to win on that ineffective assistance claim.
Generally, yeah. It's not impossible, but that Strickland standard, it's there to weed out the weak claims, you know?
Makes sense. So, procedure, the Strickland test. Mm. Anything else law students should be paying attention to from the Evans case?
The last big one is all about how much weight appeals courts give to the trial judge's original decisions. Like with that Batson challenge, they usually defer to the trial judge, especially on jury stuff.
It's almost like they're assuming the trial judge did everything right.
Mm.
But what if there was bias and the appeals court just missed it because they were too trusting?
That's the million-dollar question. Legal scholars debate that all the time. It's about balancing respect for the trial court with, you know, making sure justice really happened.
So appeals courts, they have to be careful.
Oh, absolutely. They can't just rubber stamp everything. But they also know the trial judge was there, saw everything firsthand, which they can't get from a transcript.
It makes you realize how complicated this whole appeals process is, huh? There's so many layers.
It is. It really is. Appeals courts, they got to sort through so much information, weigh the arguments, and decide if the trial court messed up, all without being there themselves.
Deference is kind of acknowledging that they have limits, huh?
Yeah, in a way. They can't retry the whole thing, you know? They're looking for big errors that really screwed up the defendant's rights, not just little things they might have done differently.
It's like they're searching for huge red flags, not just like minor procedural hiccups.
Good analogy. And even if they find a mistake, they still gotta ask, did it actually affect the outcome?
This is making me think back to that prosecutor's comment about O.J. Simpson. It was ill-advised, but they didn't overturn the whole case because of it. Is that appellate deference in action?
Could be. The appeals court, even though they knew the prosecutor kind of messed up, they decided it wasn't enough to justify a do-over. They looked at the whole trial, all the evidence against Evans, and said, look, this one comment didn't poison the whole thing.
So even if something seems super wrong, it doesn't mean the case gets automatically tossed.
Not at all. They're looking for stuff that really undermine the whole idea of a fair trial. And one questionable remark, especially when the evidence is already stacked against the defendant, it usually doesn't meet that bar.
Man, this is so interesting. I feel like we're getting this behind-the-scenes look at how the legal system really works.
It is, isn't it? But it's also important to remember Jerry Watson, you know, the victim. We get so caught up in the legal back and forth, it's easy to forget there was a real person who lost their life.
That's a good point. For Watson's family, this wasn't just legal maneuvering. It was about justice for someone they loved.
Absolutely. And for Evans, it was and still is a fight for his life. Literally. These cases, they aren't just abstract problems in a textbook. There are real people, real emotions, and real consequences.
It makes you realize that law isn't just about rules and procedures, huh? It's about people's lives, their stories.
Well said. The Evans case, it's a reminder that the legal system is more than just a bunch of rules. It's a reflection of us, you know, our values, our flaws, and how we're always trying to find justice in this messy world. It's amazing, right, how one case, like People v. Evans Jr., it can spark all these bigger conversations about, like, the law and its place in society.
It's definitely opened my eyes, that's for sure. And as we're wrapping up here, I keep coming back to that tension we were talking about, you know, following the rules versus actually getting to justice.
That's a huge debate, and it gets even bigger when you're dealing with the death penalty, like in Evans' case. You got this idea of finality on one side, you know, the legal process has got to end somewhere. We can't just keep arguing forever.
Right, like they say, justice delayed is justice denied. At some point, you got to make a decision, give a verdict, and move on.
Exactly. Finality, it's crucial for the system to actually work. It makes those judgments mean something and keeps the courts from drowning in appeals. But then there's the other side. What if you find new evidence later, or you start to wonder if the trial was really fair in the first place?
That's where things get really messy, huh?
Super messy. You're trying to balance that need for closure with actually finding the truth and doing what's right.
It's a tough balance, for
Yeah.
sure. And that's probably why cases like Evans, they're so interesting, but also so hard from a legal point of view.
Yeah.
They make you think about the limits of the system, the mistakes that can happen, and how those decisions really impact people's lives. And in Evans' case, those impacts are literally life or death.
Right. It reminds us that law isn't just some abstract concept. It has this power to change people's lives forever. And that means we have a huge responsibility to get it right.
We've been focused on Evans' arguments and all the legal stuff, but I think it's important to remember how crucial procedure was in all of this.
Oh, you're so right. Procedure gets a bad rap sometimes. People think it's just red tape or lawyers getting people off on technicalities. But it's really there to make sure things are done fairly and consistently.
It's about creating a fair fight then.
That's it. Clear rules, clear expectations, so everyone knows how it works. Without procedure, the legal system would be total chaos.
But as we saw with Evans trying to challenge the judge, those rules can seem harsh, especially when you're looking at one specific case.
No doubt. And that's why lawyers, they can't just know the rules. They got to understand the ideas behind them, you know when to push hard and when to tell their clients, hey, this might be a losing battle.
Like being a legal strategist, figuring out your moves.
Exactly. And that strategic thinking, it's something law students can start learning now, even before they're in a courtroom. It's about breaking down cases, spotting the legal issues, and seeing how procedure can change everything.
So it's not just about memorizing the laws, it's about understanding how they actually work in the real world.
That's the key. The Evans case is a perfect example, right? It shows how procedure and legal arguments work together, how the evidence matters, and how appeals courts look at a case they weren't even a part of.
Like a crash course in legal strategy and appeals, all rolled into one.
Exactly. And there are lessons in there for everyone, not just law students, but anyone who wants to know how this whole system works, you know, how we try to achieve justice in this country.
Well, this deep dive has been quite a ride, huh? Murder, DNA, death penalty, years of appeals. We've covered some complex stuff, Batson challenges, the Strickland test, appellate deference, and we really had to think about what's fair, how procedures work, and what it means to search for justice.
It's been great unpacking all of this with you. These real-life cases, they're just fascinating to dig into.
And for everyone listening, if you're hungry for more after this deep dive into the Evans case, check out the show notes. We've got links to all sorts of stuff, the court's decision, articles about these legal issues, even info on how to get involved with criminal justice reform.
Yeah, tons of good stuff for anyone who wants to keep learning.
All right. Well, that's it for another deep dive. Hope you can join us next time for another interesting case and some more food for thought. Until then, keep those legal minds sharp.